you're in your job trying to do meaningful work and you get the feeling it's being thrown under the bus. What frightens me is in 3 years' time, we're standing in exactly the same place and saying the same things, and we haven't really done anything to move forward. We can't just keep talking about Shibobo on the halfway line is the be all and end all. You know, we have to say that we want that Shibobo to lead to a goal, and then that goal will be proudly South African. It's a gift, it's a blessing, it's everything positive for Percy. He can only be a winner.
Sokala Duma Radio.
Good day and welcome to Sokala Duma Radio. I am your host, Slew Paho. What an incredible year it has been in South African football. Apart from all of the amazing PSL action that we've seen, we have also had to watch Bafana Bafana in the AFCON, and what a tournament it was. We had our calculators out after the group stages, and afterwards we managed to beat the hosts, Egypt. What a remarkable achievement. For those of you who are disappointed with the loss to Nigeria, I want to remind you that is our best run at AFCON for 19 years. And so it was very interesting to me that Stuart Baxter chose to resign on the 2nd of August of this year. We haven't heard much from him, of course. But we have a very exclusive interview. He reveals all about the situation with regards to Bafana Bafana, his future hopes, and also some of the players that he used to manage. It's such a fantastic chat, and I'm very excited for all of you to listen to it. This is The Big Interview. Welcome to it.
I'm happy to be joined on the line by former Bafana Bafana coach Stuart Baxter. Stuart, thanks for joining me on Sokala Duma Radio.
No, my pleasure. You're welcome.
So, firstly, it was a tough month in Egypt, but all things considered, it's still our best run in AFCON for about 19 years. Obviously, we'd all like us to see the glory days of us lifting the trophy again, but what was your mandate going into the tournament, and how would you rate the performance overall?
Well, actually, I had no mandate going into the tournament. The mandate was to qualify. So going into the tournament, we were all aware of the fact that a good result would affect our seedings for the World Cup, etc. And we were very conscious of that. Given the preparations, which were a bit shambolic at times, I thought the players put on a good performance. You know, the earlier games, the players weren't 100%. In sync. We'd had a compromised camp at home, and we had to cancel the game. And then when we got to Egypt, Angola pulled out of a game, and it was a little bit hectic. You know, we were worried that we weren't going to be ready for the group stages. So I think as the tournament progressed, we got better. I thought the performance against Egypt was magnificent, and I thought the very quick game against Nigeria, I thought the lads gave that a really good shot. So all in all, I think South Africa can be pleased with the performance of the players. And you're right, everybody wants to win it. You know, we didn't go there to only beat Egypt and then go out honourably. We wanted to go as far as we could go. So, but given that, we were disappointed. Of course we were disappointed. But with a bit of space to look back at, you know, the conditions that the players had and the way they applied themselves, And the way they held their nerve against Egypt, which was for me, is a massive thing for South Africa, because we can't say that our national football team has always won the mental battles. You know, they're very often achieved when there's not a lot of mental stress or pressure there. So I was pleased with that one, and I think the players, in hindsight, can be quite pleased.
And it must have caused a lot of anxiety to go through the group stages in that fashion. There's the running joke about pulling our calculators out. Even when we got through to the round of 16, everyone said that we were lucky to be there. So what do you have to do to motivate the players for such a match against Egypt with so much doubt surrounding the team?
No, nothing. I mean, those doubts totally without any... It's meaningless, really, to the squad, because people will have opinions on a game of football. Portugal went through in exactly the same fashion in the Euros and won the Europeans. No one was saying that oh, they got in through the back door or whatever. You know, that is, there's just, but that's opinions. And the game of football is about opinions, and sport is about opinions, which is what makes it so wonderful, because, you know, you can discuss, you can debate, you can have your opinion, and you have the right to that opinion. But the job of a football team and a football coach is to screen off all the meaningless opinions that are going on all over the world, and your opinion within the squad and your opinion of the players is what's got to be the paramount importance. So I'm not trying to make it like an insult to everybody that has an opinion. I'm just saying that the game of football is about going into your challenge, knowing your way that you're going to play, and screening off all this what ifs and what did he say and she say, and what does the newspapers say about us today? That's all going to disappear. And it's exactly what I mean. I think the lads did a great job of doing that, because if you don't, you can't give a performance the way they gave against Egypt.
But then, you know, August 2nd rolls around and we get the news that you've resigned, and the initial plan was to have you as coach until the 2022 World Cup. So the media suggested that it might have been a lack of support from SAFA that played a role. Why did you decide to leave, and what led to the decision?
It was a mixture of a few things. I think the basic question you've got to ask yourself in any job, I'll ask you, if you're in your job and you're sitting every night trying to do meaningful work, and you get the feeling, no, this is just not working. It's not possible. Partly maybe it's the people around me upstairs that are not giving me the tools to do the work. Partly it's because I'm being frustrated when I'm doing what I think is meaningful work, but it's being thrown under the bus. That sort of thing, I mean, in any walk of life. Now, as a football coach, I get the pleasure of, if I can't do the job properly and if my results are bad, I get pilloried in the national press and on television and on radio and on social media, and my life's a living hell. I don't mind having a fair crack of the whip and saying, well, let's carry on doing the job and let's have a real go at it, because we're building. If you feel deep down that I don't care what anybody else says, we've got a chance of doing something. But when my feeling is it's getting more and more difficult to bridge all of the, let me call it the nonsense, then wherever it comes from, then you've got to, with your hand on your heart, say, look, someone else is better to do this, because I want to go this way and we can't go that way. And that's just frustrating me.
I understand that. And so, you know, coming from a fan's perspective, for the past 19 years, it feels like we've had a new coach almost every year. Many South Africans are curious as to why this is the case. It feels like it can't just be the match results. So what do you think, as a follow-up question, are the main issues with the state of South African football that need to be fixed in order to add stability to the team?
That's a massive question, and I think it lies on so many different levels. I think it's, I said when I took the job, I said that if we can get everybody singing off the same hymn sheet, then South African football has got a huge chance to break back into the echelon of where we all believe it should be. Now, we base that on patriotism, on passion, on belief, on pride. We're not basing it on the last 4 or 5 years' results, really. Because apart from Sundowns and Pirates going far in their African Champions League Conference, you know, apart from that, there's not been that much success to motivate us having that opinion. But because we see the talent, and we have a league where we can showcase that talent, the next thought should be that because of that, we should be more successful. And we may be true, but then we've got to dig in and say, well, what work is being done to underpin all of that? And if the work at the association and the work at the clubs and the media and the supporters and the players and the recruitment and the coach education, if all that is going hand in hand, we have got every right to be saying that we should be better than we are at the moment. But if it's not like that, that is maybe what is holding us back. And that's what I was saying before I went into the job, and it was what I was saying as I left the job. And so, to answer your question, we'd be on so many different levels that I would need to be here all night. But the thing is that if everybody in South Africa doesn't get on the same page, I'm afraid that we're going to be treading water. And I said at the beginning of the AFCON campaign, when I asked for certain things and I asked for patience with deepening the squad and bringing in some of the younger ones, when I said that, because what frightens me is not losing a game of football. What frightens me is in 3 years' time, we're standing in exactly the same place and saying the same things and complaining, and we haven't really done anything to move forward. So I said that then as I went in, and I said it as I went out as well.
Sokola Duma Radio.
Hey Sokola Duma listeners, the Sokola Duma social media app has finally launched. Head to Google Play or Apple App Store, search Sokola Duma and download it now. You can earn airtime, data, and a whole lot more for simply taking selfies and sharing them. Well, Molefi Nteki is your replacement and you worked quite closely with him. He was on your technical team. He's also a former youth team coach. What can you tell us about him and his character?
Molefi has got a good character. I mean, he will obviously be asking himself questions about whether he's ready for the job, etc., etc. But I have to say that Molefi, if he believes in himself, will do a good job. And I think some of the other names that have been mentioned, I mean, I have to say Molefi is way ahead of them, because he knows this squad of players. He knows the younger players that he's going to need to bring through, because the next step is to bring in a few of the younger players and allow a few of the soldiers that have done really well for South Africa, allow them to pass through and bring them and replace them by the younger ones and allow that enthusiasm. But he's got to keep faith with the same principles that we've been working with. And he's got to make sure that if he can, he can take that on to the next level. When I say in a South African way, I don't mean going back to just talking all the time about shoeshine football or whatever. I mean using the qualities that South African footballers have to address the things that win and lose games of football in the modern era. And I think if we use our mobility and speed and skill in possession of the ball to retain possession and not give it back to the opponents quickly, if we use our skill and mobility and speed to pick our way through and balance that with a bit of structure, then even if an opponent is set, we can do that. And when we defend in, if we use our speed to press properly and we use our organisation, if we have to defend deeply, then we're marrying what happens in the modern game with what happens especially in South Africa. But that has to be a marriage. We can't just keep talking about Shibobo on the halfway line is the be all and end all. You know, we have to say that we want that Shibobo to lead to a goal, and then that goal will be proudly South African. You know, it needs to have that stamp on it. I was aware of that we need to try to be South Africans, but also aware of that marriage between what wins modern games of football and where will we go in 3 or 4 years. Playing South African football, I was very aware of that. And I think Molefi is. And I think if he can carry on trying to marry the two and bringing the young ones through, I think he's a good man for the job.
Definitely. You know, speaking of Molefi, he's made a real effort to talk to PSL coaches about players and about developing these players. So the only issue I see there is that multiple coaches in the PSL have been given the axe again this season. What are your thoughts on these PSL teams firing coaches so early into their tenures, not being given the chance to grow with the team?
On the one hand, we all know when we get into this job of football that it's a result-driven industry. We know that. I think sometimes when we give coaches jobs, we don't consider if that coach suits our club. You know, the coach, does his attitude to the game of football marry with what we want at this football club? Is it conducive to how our supporters want to play? I'm guessing if a coach went into Sundowns after Pizzo and started playing long ball, that the supporters would react. I don't think there's many clubs that would say that we will accept anything from the coach as long as we win, because the supporters may not, and the media may not, and the players may not. And so you've got to get that one right. Now, having said that, I just think that they're my colleagues, you know, and I know most of them. And I know that they're decent people wanting to do a decent job, and they're good coaches. Now, we can talk about it being a result-driven industry, but at some point, the security of the coach is important. Why is it important? Because without that security, the coach cannot be creative. If the coach is scared that he's going to lose his job, if he loses two games on the spin, then he closes up and he plays safety first, and then he plays a little bit of, he plays with his nerves, and he plays, instead of with his creativity. And I think that's the most important part. Again, that's another thing for one of those little building blocks in the building of South African football.
Definitely. So I think that's a nice segue into the fact that it's been a couple months since you left the Bafana position. Now, there's a few teams in this league who may be looking for a coach right now, but I know you're up in Sweden at the moment. Do you have plans on returning to coaching, and how long until we can see you on the touchline again?
I'm guessing about 1st of January. I've got two or three things. I've turned down a couple of jobs. I could have dived straight in, and I didn't. I'm trying to be a bit patient, because 1 week was nice, 2 weeks was okay, 3 weeks out of work and not the smell of the grass, and I was climbing the walls, 4 weeks and my wife wants me out of the house. So I am getting very tempted now, and there's a few things happening. There's a couple of things in Asia, and there's a couple of things in Europe, and I'm just going to try to make a good decision. I will probably work again in South Africa. Our family loves South Africa. My wife said to me the other day, she says, you can take the coach out of South Africa, but you can't get South Africa out of the coach. So I think there's a lot to be said for that at the moment. But our family loves South Africa, and we feel that that's our second home. And it would be a surprise if I didn't work at some point back in South Africa.
It's good to hear. So I wanted to ask about a player who was a star man for you then and still a star man for us now, Percy Tau, who is on loan over at Club Brugge. He continues to impress.
Yeah.
They now found themselves in a tough group alongside PSG and Real Madrid. And I know that you once had a tough group when you managed AIK. And I just wanted to ask, what are the benefits that he will gain from playing against such world-class, well-funded opposition like that?
Yeah, it's a gift. I mean, it's a gift. It's a blessing. It's everything positive for Percy. He can only be a winner. He can only be a hero. Because when we played Barcelona, Fiorentina, Arsenal, when we played those teams, our boys stretched themselves so far. We gave everyone a game, which was virtually impossible. It was ridiculous, but it happened. And Percy will experience every one of those games as being stretching himself. He will learn more about himself. When he takes on Ramos and beats him, it will be a big thing for him. When he takes a PSG, he takes on the PSG defenders and beats them, it'll be a massive thing. So I think that if you're now looking at the benefits, they far, far, far outweigh the negatives. So Percy should go into it as a completely open book and write his own story. And I think Percy has got more to come. And this is maybe that little trigger that will give him the springboard that he needs.
Definitely. So it's funny. It's England's work permit structure relies on the player's national team and where they rank, which is preventing Percy from playing for his main team, Brighton. It is an issue that Bafana is ranked so low, but do you think in Percy's case, considering Brighton obviously aren't in the Champions League, that it may be a strange blessing in disguise that he had to be loaned out?
I think so. I have to be honest, and I have to say that Brighton with Chrissy Hughton was a team that probably would have not been the one that Percy would showcase himself in. I think he was good enough for it, but I don't think it would have been a great one. Graham Potter's now, I know Graham Potter, he worked in Sweden, and Graham Potter's Brighton is playing a lot more, plays with a lot more freedom, but they don't win as many games. Chris was good at grinding out results, and now they are playing but not picking up points. While they're doing that, I think it's not bad that Percy's playing in the Champions League. I mean, I think he could play for Brighton, no problem. But I think he's better where he is at the moment. So get this on your CV, get this in your locker, and then if the rules change or his hand becomes a bit stronger, I'm sure that Percy will, the day he goes back to Brighton, I'm sure he'll be a great asset to them.
Definitely. I wanted to pick your brain about this. So it was pointed out recently, and it's true, that compared to the rest of world football, South African players tend to mature and become an important influence in their team only around their mid to late 20s, as compared to other large footballing nations like Brazil or France, for example, where a player like Mbappe can be the star of a World Cup winning team at age 19. Do you believe that there's more to be done on the development level to improve the quality of young players in South Africa?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a few reasons for that. You know, one, obviously we have to see if we can get better facilities for the young players. Two, we have to see if our coach education can put coaches with the young players that want to be the best under 15 coach in the world, and not you putting someone with the under 15s or the under 12s or 13s. Actually, he wants to be the head coach at Barocca. You know, that's, I think coaching youngsters is a skill, it's an art, and I think we need to produce those people that want desperately to produce players and move them on. So I think that's also part of the coach education and then the talent identification. We must get them through more quickly and give them that experience. And then there's the social aspect, isn't it? You know, young boys, they get taken and given a contract and they become satisfied. They don't want to move on. They think it's okay now. I'm helping my family and I'm satisfied. And we have to give them help there to make sure they stay hungry so that we can fast track them through into the first team earlier. We can keep that hunger so they don't stagnate. And then their next move may be to a European team or maybe to a foreign team. And it may be to stay and become a legend, as many of our players have done. But it needs addressing. And I think if we can address all those things, then I think you'll see that there's nothing wrong with the South African kids and they will also be able to be bloodied earlier.
Definitely. So, you know, at the beginning of the month, we had these issues with regards to friendlies being cancelled due to xenophobic violence. We've now been confirmed to face Mali in our next one. But taking into consideration that Yonteki was part of your technical staff, do you think, one, that he's had enough time to assert himself as coach and implement his vision before the AFCON qualifiers in November?
I don't know. My first response would probably be it's gone a little bit too quick. But then again, I walked in 1 week before the Nigeria game and we ended up beating Nigeria in Nigeria for the first time for a long time. And even the Egypt game and the Libya game away, you know, you've got to put together a game plan in a few days. So yes, it's quick, but Malefi's been with me and he can stand and he can think on his feet. And I'm sure that he won't be just going in there and wind it, cranking out the same old things that I did. He'll be doing his own thing a little bit, and I think this is a great game. And Mandela is always an honour. It's always a pleasure and a privilege to take part in it. And I'm sure that Malefi will have the boys fired up and wanting to show a little bit, even if it's only showing some signs, some roots, some shoots of green coming through. You know, to say that we're on our way and we're carrying on from the result in AFCON. We're not lying back and thinking, what a good boy am I. So, yeah, I think he'll be okay, but it is a big ask for him.
Mm, definitely. Well, Stuart Baxter, former Bafana Bafana coach, thank you for taking your time out to talk to me. And we look forward to seeing you back on the touchline back come January.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. I look forward to that as well.
And that is how we wrap things up here today at Sokola Duma Radio. What an absolute pleasure it has been to host former Bafana Bafana coach Stuart Baxter on the show. Finally, 2 months on, getting some real details on why he left the position and what his plans are for the future. From myself, your host, Slu Paho, and my editor, Simon Strella, have a fantastic day.
Sokola Duma Radio. Sokola Duma Radio.